some go either to so ill in hospital, and we also have an apology from our whip here, Mr. the Honourable Chris Mthuli, who is also duty whip in the extended public debate for the budget, etc. So when he leaves early, it's not through a lack of interest, but to take up another duty in the House. Other than that, there are no apologies that I'm aware of, unless the committee secretary will alert me. Right. I further understand that these regulations should have been completed in terms of our oversight about 6 weeks ago, or 2 months, and it was further extended due to the fact that Parliament itself was not in the process of committees up and running and so on. So this was extended to the 30th of June. And very quickly then, members, I'm going to allow the Chief Director of the National Gambling Board, is that right? But it's actually you from the department, are you not, referring to the Gambling Board, to brief us very quickly through your document, tell us why you're here and what the critical issues are in these regulations, although I know some members have studied them in depth and have formed their own opinion as to what the critical issues are. Please introduce your team and then continue.
Thank you, Chairperson, and the committee members. my name is Nomfundo Maseti. I'm the Chief Director at the Department of Trade and Industry. My team here, I'll start from my left. It's immediately from my left. It's Mpho Musing, the Director on Regulated Industries. She's the person who's responsible for gambling matters at the Department of Trade and Industry. I have Mashamaite, Ernest. He's also working closely with us on matters relating to gambling. Next to Mashamaite, I have Totiso Pulagi. She's working for the National Gambling Board. Next to shortly, so I have Temba Mahasha. He's the Chief Operating Officer at the National Gambling Board. They are supporting the DTI's team today to try and provide some practical examples in the area of interactive gambling, just to assist with the clarification for the department. I would like to thank the committee again for giving us the opportunity today to present the regulations on interactive gambling. Just for the benefit of the committee will recall that during 2007, the committee processed the National Gambling Amendment Act, which sought to introduce the internet-based gambling as part of the gambling activities, effectively amending the 2004 Gambling Act. Just by way of background, in that legislation, the 2004 legislation, that is the National Gambling Act of 2004, it was stated clearly there in terms of Section 11 of that Act that interactive gambling is prohibited in South Africa until such time that perhaps Parliament gets an opportunity to make a thorough assessment whether South Africa is ready to legalize interactive gambling. As a result of that section which prohibits interactive gambling, there was a directive from Parliament that within 2 years of that legislation, the 2004 legislation, the department can bring the issue of interactive gambling before Parliament. That was then done in 2007, and that legislation was processed through Parliament and was passed by Parliament and was signed into law last year in July by the President. Now, subsequent to the signing of that legislation, the National Gambling Amendment Act, which introduces the interactive gambling, which is the subject of today's discussion. We were then required to table before the Parliament, particularly this committee as well as the Select Committee, the regulations and subordinate legislation, just to give Parliament the opportunity to provide input on the regulations, particularly on the concerns that were raised at the time when the legislation was processed here in Parliament. And we can touch on some of the key concerns that were particularly raised by this committee. So really today, the purpose of today's discussion is to provide this committee with the opportunity to perhaps give input and guide the department on the areas where we need to close some gaps in terms of the interactive gambling by way of regulation, and where we can perhaps amplify the processes in terms of regulation. So we would welcome then that kind of input and guidance from the committee today. My first slide here really talks to the purpose of the presentation to the committee today. That for purposes of an oversight role, but also the specific provision that is in the legislation, the National Gambling Amendment Act of 2007, where it requires that the regulations be tabled before Parliament, we actually fulfilling that specific requirement in terms of tabling these regulations before the committee today. Just by way of background again to the committee members, to state that the National Gambling Act of 2004, the mandate or the purpose of that legislation really is to regulate all forms of gambling activities in South Africa, with the purpose really to protect the public, particularly in instances where gambling activities are being practiced illegally, and also perhaps to put some measures which seek to guard against the adverse effects of gambling. As we know that sometimes in our society there are illicit gambling activities. Now, in terms of this legislation, we introduce measures to regulate such gambling activities, to also deal with the possible proliferation of gambling, where gambling activities are being practiced, particularly with the possibility that such activities may actually extend to the minor. So it will be better if then there are measures that are introduced to try and avoid or put some control measures in terms of such activities. So this legislation, it also seeks to enforce some responsible behavior really on the part of the operator. As we know that obviously gambling activities have some adverse effects in our societies. Therefore, it is important when licenses are being granted to the operators, that operators, they have some responsibility, particularly on issues of socio-economic development. What is it that they give back to the society and to the communities that may be adversely affected by the activities of gambling? So through the licensing processes and regulations, we require that they demonstrate the commitment in terms of social responsibility. Hence, we are saying that we enforce the responsible gambling behavior on the part of the operator, but also to ensure that at least with those people who have were addicted to gambling and they have problems, at least there must be some initiatives such as the associations whereby these people can be helped by way of educating them about the adverse effects of gambling, by way of also providing some counseling, and also in some instances to prohibit them from proceeding with the further practices or engagement in gambling activities. We also state that as part of some of the good things, we know that there are bad things, but some of the good things of the various forms of gambling, they actually contribute or facilitate infrastructure development, particularly in rural communities, if we talk about the limited payout machines and other forms of gambling. And we can give some further examples at the later stage as to what are the areas where we believe that gambling has contributed to the development of infrastructure and also some employment in certain communities. That those details can come at the later stage just for the benefit of the committee members. We also believe that the interactive gambling legislation, it contributes to the advancement of the above objectives in terms of providing access really to the HDIs and small business into getting into business, particularly those who are not in a position to operate like the big casinos, as they would require a large capital outlay, but some of the small gambling activities, it will give the small businesses, particularly the BE as well as the HDIs, an opportunity to get into business. But as long as there are some control measures in terms of avoiding proliferation of gambling. I've already touched on Section 11 of the National Gambling Act of 2004, that it prohibits the interactive gambling until such time that Parliament gets an opportunity to make an assessment of whether or not the country is ready to put some regulations around or legalize interactive gambling. And as I stated, this has been done in 2007 when the Department, as required by Parliament, brought the legislation on interactive gambling in 2007, which was passed by Parliament and signed into law in July 2008. These are regulations that seek to amplify some of the provisions or the general principles that are articulated in terms of the Principal Act, particularly on areas. I think this committee will be very much interested in focusing on areas relating to money laundering, as well as the protection of minors in terms of engaging in interactive gambling, as well as the registration of players in ensuring that we are able to detect the instances of money laundering. I think those are some of the key concerns that were raised by this committee at the time when the principal legislation was tabled before Parliament, and we'll try to talk to those specific concerns. Just in terms of the regulations that are before this committee today, these are just the stakeholders that provided written comments when we published the regulations early this year. And the comments we can provide the committee at a later stage, perhaps if we have time, at the end of the presentation, what are the key concerns that were raised by stakeholders in terms of these specific regulations. And we'll hold further feedback sessions with those specific stakeholders who provided written input. This slide seeks to talk to really the purpose of the interactive gambling legislation. I've already stated earlier on that this, because of the development of technology, sometimes it may be difficult because some people they do it behind the scenes, the interactive gambling activities. So this legislation really seeks to then put some measures to avoid overstimulation and demand for gambling. And also just seeks to provide some control measures in terms of the players or people who engage in interactive gambling activities by providing a registration process and the requirements thereof of the player in order for the player to be allowed to engage in gambling activities. And we'll get into what are the documentary requirements that are required before the player can be registered and allowed to get involved in gambling activities. Also, this legislation and the regulations, they actually try to clarify things that the operators should guard against, particularly with the view of protecting the minors in terms of engaging into gambling activities. And it also talks to try to align with the Financial Intelligence Center Act, which seeks to prohibit money laundering activities. It also, as part of that money laundering, it also seeks to prevent terrorist activities and crime as well as money laundering activities. Just to state that interactive gambling is a form of gambling that is done through the web on the platform on the internet platform. I don't know it myself. I have never engaged into it, but it's something that can be done maybe through computer if you have an access on the internet. And these days, because of the development of technology, it's something that you can even be in a position to play interactive gambling through your cell phone. As we have the 3G cards, and you get access to the internet through the cell phone. Hence, we are saying that the importance of protecting the minors it comes into play there, because the minors they have cell phones, they possess cell phones, and they may easily also get access to the internet and perhaps then engage into gambling activities. Particularly, as minors also who may have access to credit cards and other accounts whereby they can utilize the monies that are given to them by their parents and then engage into gambling activities. So it is therefore important to then put some measures rather than to have to play ignorance there, because it is very easy for them to access internet, just like they have the Mixit in these days. So it will be very easy for them to access interactive gambling. Hence, we seek in terms of these regulations to put some measures to protect minors in engaging in such activities. Just in terms of the overview of the provisions of these regulations, these regulations, they actually make some provisions in terms of the games, of the interactive gambling games, as well as the processes for the player protection. What protection is there for the player who seek to engage into interactive gambling? What are the measures that we have put in there? And then perhaps the committee, once it scrutinizes such measures, the committee may provide maybe some guidance as to what are the gaps, if the committee believes that there are some gaps there in terms of the protection. It also talks to issues of advertising, and particularly the committee will perhaps want to focus on the content of the advertisements that are put there, and just to ensure that those advertisements are not focused on minors or are trying to attract minors to get into a gambling activity. Also, these regulations, they also provide the process of licensing, that is granting of licenses to the operators. Those operators will be providing the interactive gambling activities. It also provides compliance and enforcement, such as maybe the National Gambling Board, to ensure that all the responsibilities and the obligations that are put on these operators, that the operators they actually adhere to such obligations, or they fulfill the obligations. It seeks also to put some measures to deal with the problem gambling, and what are the responsibilities there of the operators in ensuring that they contribute to avoiding the problem of gambling, of the proliferation of gambling. It also talks to money laundering as well as the taxation of the revenue of the operators. And this part about the taxation, it seeks to align itself with the money bill, which is currently processed by the National Treasury through Parliament. In terms of the provisions of the interactive gambling games and the player protection, the games, obviously, there will be some rules of procedure and certain standards that are required in terms of what games that you need to play, or how you actually play the game, what are the rules of the game. So all the standards and the technical standards, how you engage into the interactive gambling game, those specifications will be articulated in terms of the rules of procedure that will be developed by the Department of Trade and Industry as well as the National Gambling Board, just to specify the technicalities as to how you engage, the actual engagement now on the interactive gambling game. Also, in terms of the player here, it is important to emphasize that when you play the internet-based gambling, it will be the player and the operator. That is the operator itself, where you play through the through the equipment that is all provided by the operator. Not necessarily between me as a player and another player, but you will be playing against the house, against the operator. The player registration, that is what is required in terms of, for the player to be allowed to engage into interactive gambling. For example, it will be required of the player to make a statement under oath that the player is actually indeed under 18. This is over 18, to avoid those players who are actually under 18. over 18. This is one of the this part. I think the committee will be interested just to see whether there are gaps here, because this is to talk to the protection of minors and the players. So if and what we sought to do here is to also align these requirements with the requirements that are already in the Financial Intelligence Center Act. Just to avoid the money laundering scheme. Also, the details in terms of passports, in terms of the identity documents, they will be required. In terms of the second bullet point, the player who resides outside South Africa will also, or even within South Africa, will also need to state the province or where the actual physical residence of the player. This seeks to deal with those players that will be outside the country but playing the internet-based gambling in South Africa with the operators that are located in South Africa, to assess whether the player, where the player is residing, whether that country, it has measures that probably seek to avoid money laundering schemes, or also whether that country allows gambling activities or internet gambling activities. The requirement also is that of the verification of the bank details, whether the player actually holds the account. There will be two accounts, and then we will actually talk to that, whether that bank account belongs to the particular player. Maybe just for the benefit of the committee, we presented at the select committee last week, so they are sitting at 10 o'clock just to finalize on the same issue of the regulation. So we have to split our team, so they are just joining the other meeting, the select committee. With regard to the accounts, as to how are you going to engage into the gambling activities, because you need to put in some money. So there will be two accounts that are actually regulated here. The first account is the nominated account, and that account relates to the credit card account as well as the check account. It is the account where if you won some money and the money exceeds a particular threshold, which is the 20,000 that has been proposed in here in this regulation, the money that you have won, if you have won, say, 30,000 or 25,000, because on the other account you cannot keep an amount that exceeds the 20,000, then any amount that exceeds that, it will have to go to the nominated account. It helps then to track, because there will be two accounts, it helps to track and monitor also instances of money laundering. And that nominated account will be the account where you debit certain amounts to put it in your player account. So you debit the 20,000 that is required, you put that 20,000 in your player account, because that will be the 20,000 that you utilize to engage into the internet gambling activities. So those are the only two accounts that will be recognized for the player to utilize for purposes of the interactive gambling activities. As I stated, the amount, the maximum amount that is allowed or what that is proposed to be put in the player account, it will be 20,000. The player is also allowed to set a monetary limit prior to play. That is, if you have 20,000, you can decide not to utilize the entire 20,000. So you can state how much you want to utilize for purposes of engaging into the game. Also, I think that the part about the 7 days, it becomes important because the processing, it will take actually 10 days for the processing of that request. So it will perhaps assist in terms of if there's some illegal activities, at least they can be checked and established or detected within that 7 days before the actual processing of the request. Just in terms of responsible gambling, what are the other obligations that are put or imposed on the operators of the internet-based gambling? It is stated in the regulations that on their website there must always be a notice, and the notice must provide the following information: that there is voluntary exclusion or player exclusion, whereby you have made an assessment that you think that you are getting addicted to gambling, or you think that you are becoming gambling is becoming a problem to you. You cannot control your addiction, or there's a possible addiction on your part to gambling activities. So it will provide some useful information there that it is possible for you to exclude yourself voluntarily from engaging in further gambling activities. And the time period for that voluntary exclusion, we have said that it will be 12 months. And that information on the website or on the notice, it will also make some link to the National Responsible Gambling Program and the Responsible Gambling Hotline, where people can call if they have problems. And in terms of that National Responsible Gambling Program, there's some contribution that is made to the National Responsible Gambling Program, also by the operator, a certain percentage for social responsibility purposes. So what it does is it provides education on the adverse effects of gambling. It also provides counseling for those people who suffered or who are addictive to gambling. And it can provide up to at least 6 sessions of counseling. And I believe that it is also practiced here in Cape Town. I think further details on this can be provided by the National Gambling Board, as they are working closely with the association that is responsible for education as well as the counseling for those who need counseling as they experience problems with gambling. That website must also provide information in relation to self-diagnosis test. There will be some form of a sort of a questionnaire whereby you can put in some responses. There will be questions, and then you answer those questions, and then it will make an assessment and or a diagnosis so that you can assess whether you are now nearing the level where you can say you are sort of you are having a problem, the gambling problem. So it will provide that, as well as the treatment of addictive gambling. One of the other things that are important here on the part of the responsibilities and the obligations of the operators is that the operators must provide an audit report about the pattern and behavior of gambling. So they must make an assessment, because people will be registering to play. So they must make an assessment of the pattern and the behavior of gambling activities, and provide that information to the National Gambling Board as well as the association that is responsible for problem gambling, so that they make an assessment and where they need to exclude certain people who seem to be having problems of gambling, then they can invoke the relevant provisions of the National Gambling Act in terms of excluding those people. It is also required of the operator to actually employ the personnel that is trained in terms of advising the players about problems, the problems of gambling, and perhaps advise on the policy of responsible gambling, to just guide also the National Gambling Board, which will also guide the Department of Trade and Industry, what is it that can be done in avoiding the problems of gambling, and providing some advice to the players there. The website must also, or the operator must also, in trying to address the possible proliferation of gambling in terms of licensing. There will only be, or at least these regulations propose that only 10 licenses that must be issued for interactive gambling. just to put the maximum, to say that 10 licenses will be issued or granted, whether they're granted in different provinces or not. But at the moment, when we're enrolling the interactive gambling and activities, we're proposing that at least 10 licenses must be issued to the operators who will be applying for operating interactive gambling activities. And in terms of those licenses, there are factors that are in the legislation currently, taking into account issues of competition, taking into account employment and the BE issues, where they can clearly demonstrate what is it that they are going to do. There are some undertakings that they are going to make in terms of contributing to BE, in terms of employment. So they will make an assessment as to who qualifies for getting such licenses. And the licenses are obviously national licenses because you can access gambling activities even if you are somewhere in Port Elizabeth and you are interacting with the operator who is sitting in Pretoria or Johannesburg. So they are national in nature because of the service that is rendered. It's not they are not limited or confined to provinces. Just to talk about the type of licenses that are envisaged. Once the operator is granted a license, that license will be valid for 5 years, and it will be renewable on a year-to-year basis, and there will be fees that are payable on a year-to-year basis when they renew the licenses. There will also be licenses that are issued to the key personnel at the operator's part. Some of the key personnel are those people who will be providing the advice on problem gambling, as well as just trying to avoid that they are not sort of cheating on the games, and then you're not winning, and then they sort of tamper with the games when the player is engaged in the gambling activities, and you put more money, and the next thing you don't get to win at all. So it just seeks to put that level of responsibility in terms of the senior management at the operator's level. It will also provide licenses to the manufacturers of the software, the manufacturers of the equipment. So it will also license those, and those will provide some maintenance services, particularly for the servers that will be there. So that means the servers are down, at least there will be some backup on all of that. So it will also monitor that by granting licenses. And then it will also include licenses that the minister may deem necessary to grant for purposes of gambling activities. Just in terms of licenses, as we have stated that because of the adverse effects of gambling, it is important that the operator must at least show some level of responsibility, particularly to the poor communities, or demonstrate the socio-economic benefits or some initiatives that the operators will undertake, or where the operators will contribute for the development of poor communities or the communities where they operate for purposes of social responsibility or giving back to the communities. So we state that when they apply for licenses, they must demonstrate what is it that they are going to do to contribute to SME development. And also, what are the measures that they are going to put in place to ensure player protection? What are the undertakings and the commitments in the area of HDIs and BE empowerment? And this part about the BE empowerment, it will relate to issues of procurement, as well as also issues of employing maybe senior executives or some ownership at a senior level, in line with the codes of OZ3BEE codes that are also administered by the Department of Trade and Industry. So there's an issue of procurement, as well as the compliance with the codes there, that the operator, when they apply for the license, they must demonstrate the commitment as to how they will contribute to that objective, or to advance the empowerment of the HDI. The operator must also demonstrate the accounting systems, the accounts that they have, and the records of betting and winnings, how they're going to keep such records and the auditing of such records will be required, and to provide the annual report as well as their contribution to the accredited maybe national responsible gambling program for purposes of assisting the communities and people who are having problems with gambling. And they must also commit a certain percentage as to out of their in terms of their revenue that they generate from the gambling activities, how much percentage are they going to contribute to the good cause, which is the national gambling responsible program. So they will need to demonstrate that. In terms of the equipment and software, certification will be required just to assess that whether this is this equipment that is used is of the required standard, and the approval will be sorted there, and it will be checked when the application for registration is submitted. In terms of money laundering, and this is also another aspect that the committee was concerned about at the time when we processed the legislation, as to how is this legislation going to address or talk to issues of money laundering. We stated there that in terms of registration of players, the documentation that is required, it is aligned to the documentation that is already prescribed in terms of the FICA Act. So we've tried to align it with that. We're also going to invoke now the section that requires the minister to denounce those countries that do not put measures that seek to avoid money laundering, so that those countries or players that come from those countries at least would not be allowed to engage into internet gambling activities. So just to also adhere to the control measures that are put there for purposes of the Financial Intelligence Center Act, as well as the money laundering initiative. Also, in terms of money laundering, just to trace the monies that are coming in and going to other accounts, the transfer of funds there is limited to one nominated account, so as to trace the origin. As I stated, there are only two accounts that are prescribed or regulated or required in terms of these regulations. So the player will only be allowed to nominate or to have one nominated account, so that you can be able to trace the origin of the monies that are being transferred to the player account. The National Gambling Board will also do some probity investigations before they grant licenses to the operators. And also, what is key and very important in terms of this legislation is the monitoring of compliance. And I think there it is important for the National Gambling Board to be capacitated so that they actually engage into or they proactively do the monitoring that is required here to ensure that the operators, they adhere to the requirements and they fulfill their obligations in terms of this legislation. Also, in terms of the responsibility of the operators to keep the records and the audit reports, and to employ some auditors to do the auditing, just to trace or to detect the money laundering activities, the operator will be required to submit such records to the National Gambling Board about the bets and the winnings that they've experienced within 1 year, so that they can check whether there are any suspicious transactions. And I think the operators, they are also required to report such suspicious transactions and report those to the National Gambling Board for further action. In terms of the companies that are outside South Africa, they will not be allowed to hold the gambling activity, to operate. I'm to say by the bell. Is it calling? Okay. I thought I'm running out of time.
No.
Okay. 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 All right. Thanks. Okay. In terms of these regulations, the companies or the operators who apply for licenses, they will be required to have some physical presence. That is, the servers must be within the Republic, just to trace the record of transactions and issues of money laundering. I've already stated the obligations that are placed on the operator for the operator to report and perhaps detect suspicious transactions and report such illegal or suspicious transactions to the National Gambling Board. And then there will also be certain provisions on control systems to be prescribed, whether the control system to try and face the money laundering scheme, and those will be approved by the National Gambling Board. With respect to the enforcement of this legislation, it will be the National Gambling Board that enforces this legislation. It will carry out the monitoring of compliance. It will also carry out some investigations, the property investigations on operators before operators are granted with licenses. It will also monitor compliance with certain conditions that are imposed on operators in relation to SMME developments, whether they are fulfilling those requirements. Also in respect to empowerment of HDIs and other commitments that they've put before the National Gambling Board when they applied for the licenses. The Gambling Board will also enforce or monitor the compliance with the Financial Intelligence Center Act and conduct some inspections. So there's a whole lot of, there's quite a huge mandate, if I may put it that way, on the part of the National Gambling Board to really carry out what is required in terms of this legislation and supervise. So it will really need some capacity there. It will also monitor the content of advertisements just to ensure that such advertisements are not directed to minors or attracting minors, or to put some role models there to say that, you know, this role model, they started here, that this one was very poor, but the role model engaged into interactive gambling activities. Now this person owns about 2 cars, you know, expensive or luxury cars. So, you know, such content, if it has that element of attracting the minor, the National Gambling Board will have to intervene and make an assessment of that. The board will also revoke or suspend licenses if there's no compliance. The board may also delegate some of its enforcement and compliance powers. As I stated, it will require a lot of capacity on the part of the National Gambling Board. But the Gambling Board will also rope in the Provincial Gambling Board to assist it with inspections, for example, just to ensure compliance, and as well as some monitoring, and they will have to cooperate, that is the National Gambling Board as well as the Provincial Gambling Board, in ensuring or enforcing this legislation. The board will also conduct some hearings to try and resolve some disputes and refer certain offenses to the NPA, particularly on money laundering, and ensure the integrity of the industry by eliminating illegal interactive gambling activities. I've already touched on the issue of advertising. The key thing there is the content of the advertisement and ensuring that it doesn't attract minors or it's not directed to minors, at least the focus of the advert. Lastly, the fees that will be levied with respect to the application and the registration. This is the category of fees that are proposed in terms of this legislation. When the operators apply for the license, the application fee there will be 500,000, and the investigation fee, that is for the National Gambling Board to conduct the property checks, they will charge 350. That takes into account the costs that are incurred by the board in terms of carrying out such property checks. There are also licensing fees and the annual renewal fees, whereby the license, although the license is valid for 5 years, when they come and renew on a yearly basis, they will be required to pay 300,000, for example, for renewing the license to operate on an annual basis. If they want to make some alterations, perhaps on the conditions or other things on the license, they will be required to pay 75,000 for that. And also, it will allow for transfer of ownership, and then there will be some charges that are also put or imposed for such transfer of ownership. There are also fees for the manufacturer of the software and the manufacturer and the suppliers of the equipment and those who provide the maintenance activities. There will be fees that are also levied against them. The revenue of the operators will also be taxed in terms of the money bill that is currently processed through Parliament by the National Treasury. So it's one of the pieces of legislation that this legislation will be dependent upon for implementation. That is the end of my presentation, Chair, and thank you again for giving us the opportunity to present to the committee today. So we'll take guidance from the committee and any input from the committee that the committee feels that it is important before the department can finalize these regulations for final publication and implementation. And thank you.
Thank you very much, then, Ms. Maseki. I think that it may be useful for us at this point just to engage with the committee to raise any questions or clarifications they may have. And let's see, Matt, perhaps we'll take three different members.
Madam Chair. Just three quick questions, maybe just for clarity as well. You've mentioned the stakeholders that you have consulted and that there will be feedback sessions to these stakeholders in July. Can you give us some of the concerns that maybe the stakeholders has reported and, you know, to what extent have you accommodated the issues raised by them? The second one is with regards to the operators. Have you issued or granted licenses already? Because I have seen on television, there's, I think it's Silver Sands that has got an ad, and that clearly indicates to interactive gambling for me. So I just want to know whether license has been granted and whether that is then in line with this regulation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Maria. Honourable van der Westhuizen.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Interactive gambling brings gambling very close to people's houses, even homes, wherever they are. And I'm just concerned that the regulations to exclude people from gambling may not be strong enough for this expansion of the opportunities to gamble. At present, as I understand the Act, a person can either voluntarily exclude him or herself, or some people around that person, people that depend on that person, or a family member, etc., can approach a court of law to have such a person declared as an excluded person. And I would like to hear the comments of our visitors here today as to whether this has been working and whether we shouldn't be thinking of strengthening the exclusion terms of people, because I can just imagine that it's not easy to get a court order, especially for a poor person, against a family member that he or she is dependent on. Thank you.
Honourable Kotsi.
Chair, I think some of us are coming at the end tail, perhaps, of this, because I see now that we're discussing the regulations, and it means the Act is already in operation. We're just dealing with the regulations. Perhaps our input is really at the tail end. I think mine, Chair, at this stage, really, because I have not had time to go through the Act itself as a whole, and it has been practically impossible. I may have very little contribution on this, but is there any summary of this Act that perhaps could be provided for members, at least to have an understanding I've been trying to go through, and I know when you are not part of the process, it's not easy to. I really need to a summary of what we're dealing with here. I'm unable to deal with this, you know, piece by piece because I don't have the holistic approach to this. But perhaps just to make a small comment on the issue of the how gambling, the operations of the gambling, as I know. I think whatever we put here, I wonder how much of that, in terms of monitoring the very issues of even the children, you say, you know, this is, you know, our own kids, you know, are able to dodge us on certain issues, you know, the mixed and all that. I don't think I can keep up with them. I don't think there's any act that can keep up with them. I hear you putting it so nice here. You know, I see my 16-year-old, you talk to her, she has already sent about 20 messages to someone within, you know, a second. Really, what we put in terms of the act, really, are we really realistic in saying it's curbing? You're saying it so nicely here, it's going, you know, children and so forth. The fact of the matter is that they know million things that we don't know as parents, you know. And we say, for instance, there is the issue of people get robbed of their monies from their accounts and that. With all what we have, you know, internationally, that continues to happen. People are able to get through to other people's credit cards and so forth. Monitoring is my problem. I mean, we can put something here, monitoring that and avoiding kids having access to that. Can we say we've done enough? And really, that's just my question. Thank you.
Honourable Kotze, if, certainly one wasn't tending to be rude there, but rather to take account of the point you were making. Indeed, most of us sitting here would be in your position. So it is extremely difficult to catch up on the hop, as it were. All of us think we have some vague idea of gambling, and indeed, you know, I was just hearing right now from the researcher on my right, Mr. Masangu, that the news24.com indicates that as we talk here, more than 30% of youngsters already are involved in interactive gambling. Now, I would assume, if that is the case, because of course I'm speaking third party now, I know that South Africa certainly is way ahead sometimes, technically speaking, than other countries, and at other times perhaps just on a par. But I'm sure some of these other countries have faced the same challenges. And yet, the kids are one step ahead, as it were. Now, I'm just making that as a comment further to what Honourable Kotze has said. But I, before we hand over to the department, are there any other questions that Honourable members would like to raise? I see Honourable Kwabasa, Honourable Njikalana.
Yeah, Chairman, just two questions. I seek clarity on the point where you say that you're only going to give 10 licenses, probably spread over the 9 provinces. The question, I'm just speaking aloud now. The question I have is, and you're saying you're doing this in order to control, you know, the proliferation of gambling. How is this license going to work? Is it going to prohibit a person from using this license to have 5 or 6 gambling places in different towns in a province? Or, you know, you're saying you're giving this person a license to operate one casino in one specific place, and that is it. The second question relates to the renewal of the license. What would inform you to renew or not to renew the license? Thank you.
Thanks, Jack Person. And through you, Chair, I'm sure Mama City gets a little bit of a relief because with the past committee, the first thing she would have got is millions of scat measures just on gambling. Just to share the previous experience. If I can share that, the first thing that we did in the past committee when this was brought in the amendment was just to come down like a ton of bricks on them, that we don't want gambling, we don't know how we approved it. And they had to plead that, look, if this very parliament would have approved the first act. But my question was...
We have a more inspiring...
No, you are very soft, I must say. A couple of questions. First one is around the 5 years renewability. What would be the basis of renewing an operator's fee? I mean, an operator's license. Would it be based on performance or compliance or targets or whatever? Just one of the things that runs in one's mind. The second one is, I hear mention is made of linking up with other governments. Now, I also do not have the full recollection of what is in the main act. But the question would be, is there any arrangement whereby our government would be able to reach to cooperate with other governments regarding illegal activities in particular, or even just monitoring. Reference was made there, playing patents. Obviously, this is more complex. So those are the things that run in one's mind. That is there any provision around government to government cooperation? The other question is about government access to the gambling data. Operators will collect data, and that will produce, you know, a data around the playing patterns. Now, to what extent will the government per se have access to that data? And that's linked to monitoring as well, you know, and evaluation. Is there any provision on that in that regard, just to monitor those patents, and how would it be done if there's any provision? Thank you.
Yes, Honourable Lavinia.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and members. Thank you for the presentation. My question is on the issue of issuing of 10 licenses. That what is going to be done to ensure that there is no corruption in the process? Because obviously, if you are only going to issue 10 licenses nationally, there is going to be people who are going to try and use their money in order to get licenses. What is going to be done in that respect? And then I also need clarity, Chair, on the issue of voluntary player exclusion information. Why 1 year? I just need clarity on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, members. I'd like to just pose one or two myself. But did I? Ah, you returned just in time. Thank you, Honourable Turok.
Firstly, my apologies for I had to go and see something about something. So I've missed the presentation, and I'll try and read the stuff afterwards. But I do have just one little thing to say on the basis of last year's discussion. We can pass the best laws and the best regulations, but the question of monitoring is central. You know, we spent so much time discussing the gaming machines and cut them down and even forced the provinces to reduce the number of gaming machines all over the place. But because the monitoring and supervision is fairly lax, there's been a proliferation of gambling machines all over the place. So the same is true of this, of all gambling. There is seems to be a natural tendency for gambling to increase. People who are in dire situations want to try and make a bit of extra cash. So the only point I would want to make is this. Whatever the regulations proposed might be, I think that the department must report regularly to the committee, I think even quarterly, on the scale of monitoring, the scale of supervision, so that we actually know that what we approve, even if we do it with great reluctance, is subject to review on a quarterly basis. And we want the data, the statistics, the number of people in prison, and all that. And that's, frankly, for me, I would almost say, for me, that is a condition for supporting anything. That you report on a quarterly basis what you've done to monitor and regulate, etc. I would urge that, Chair, because we've been this road before with other mechanisms of gambling. We've tried to reduce it, we've tried to, all sorts of conditions, but what actually happens afterwards is beyond us. Now, while we are lawmakers, we're also overseers. So I really would urge that this kind of thing, which, as we discussed previously, is so open to abuse. The key issue, I don't know whether people have raised it here, is that a youngster sitting at home... You have. So, okay, you know the hazard.
In fact, it was strongly raised here. I think, you see, the issue is, I think, with the gambling, and certainly we would like that commented on, or for any form of activities, which is always interesting to see when something is, as it were, being sold to Parliament. We then learn about all of these positives about whatever it is. I mean, people went so far as to say, let's legalize prostitution for the 2010. Well, I mean, I don't have a problem if that's the only way people can earn a living. But really, the point is this. What the big issue here, you know, people come here and they say the interactive, for example, slide 4. Interactive gambling legislation contributes to the advancement and achievement of the above socio-economic benefits. This sounded really quite inspirational. And then we go back and we read all of the socio-economic benefits. And you could argue that, yes, indeed it does. It certainly does. Money is collected and can be used for that effect. Absolutely not untrue. But what about the other side of the coin, which is indirectly referred to and what amounts to some sort of voluntary exclusion and also exclusion by the different agencies for if a player is seen to require that. Now, that's two sides of it, but it seems to be much more difficult to rely on voluntary exclusion, and that's already been referred to in other forms of exclusion in this regard. The other factor is the concurrency of this issue between provinces and national. And also, I'm just wondering where this 10th place will be. When we first issued gambling licenses, when the laws were first passed, there was a race for just to get a gambling license and not even to think of generating any other form of economic activity. Got to have this. And fights to get it. And the province then supporting
the different groupings that wanted it so that a province could have a particular gambling license, casino, etc. Now, when you're saying 10 of these, the question has already been asked as to where these are going to be located. Are you going to implement this point you've made, that it is to advance the achievement of the above socioeconomic benefits, and let's place 3 in the Eastern Cape? I don't know. Now, what is going to inform where you are placing these? Or is it going to be some under-the-table negotiation? Because it's widely spoken about that too many authorities have almost been co-opted into these things, which is why we don't get, or rather why we seem to carry on proliferating in the gambling. So the point is made about monitoring, and I'd like the team to explain very clearly how they're going to ensure three things. The two mentioned here about minors, we've had all of that done. The second about the addictive grouping that get addicted, and the next thing, never mind socioeconomic benefits, you're actually doing a huge payout in government to correct all of this, and families are broken up. But the third point is the so-called point made here about local economic development and jobs. How do you see this actually acting as a catalyst in communities, and what monitoring measures are you implementing in that particular regard? One final thing is on the banking and the age. I'm not sure how you're going to actually verify that a 17-year-old is, you know, is 18 as claimed with a bank account, unless you're linked to Home Affairs. And how good is that equipment at Home Affairs with the banks? You know, how will you verify the ID against the bank account? The other issue is the kind of operational activities. I'm referring to your actual act here in which you say that the license is granted for 5 years. And then if you granted something for 5 years, you have to still renew it annually. So you granted it fresh every year, or how does the system actually work in practice?
The issue of what the minister is going to be doing, you, there are categories, but there is a category that you are too vague on. It's not clear. It does not say. Perhaps if you can give us an example of what else, what other, you say any other category or activity that the minister may deem.
Over to yourself and the team then, Ms. Masita.
Thank you, Chair. I will, and thank you for the question. I think, as I stated at the beginning of the presentation, that the key issues here really is the issue of monitoring and the capacity that is needed, that is required, and what measures and control measures that we have put in place in terms of these regulations, so that if there are gaps, and the committee can perhaps point to those gaps in terms of the monitoring and provisions and systems that we have put in place in terms of these regulations. We'll talk to that, and then we'll point out what is it that we have put in place so that the committee can assist if there are still gaps in terms of the monitoring. Also, the key issue there, and it was an issue that was raised even previously by this committee, and we will try to explain what is it that we have put in place in terms of the the access to minors, in terms of the internet gambling activities. As we have stated, that it is illegal currently because that legislation is not implemented. It is dependent on these regulations. It is also dependent on the money bill. So if there are activities that are currently taking place, we have stated that they are taking place behind the scenes. But then if there are already those activities taking place at this moment because of the development of technology and things that we may not see. What is it that we have put in place to make sure that right now, even those that are taking place behind the scenes, we will be in a position to detect and perhaps avoid them in terms of this legislation? We will seek to talk to that so that if there are still some gaps, the committee can point us to those gaps and then we can perhaps make some necessary amendments to these regulations. I will also talk to the issue of the 10 licenses. It is an issue how the spread of those licenses is going to be done and what are the factors, because it's already in the legislation, but we'll point out the factors that we need to take into account when we issue those licenses, issues of the spread of the licenses, the factors about the possible proliferation of gambling, so that you make a scan first, an assessment, as to the activities of gambling taking place also in particular areas and provinces. So we'll touch into all of that, and I'm just guiding my team so that when they explain these things, they explain them in that simplest form. I will hand over first to Temba to just take up some questions, and then Paul from the department will take up some questions. And Temba will focus also mainly on the monitoring part and the capacity of the National Gambling Board in enforcing this legislation and carrying out compliance as well as the monitoring.
Thank you, Chairperson. For the questions, it's my duty to enlighten the House and clarify any concerns which are around the table, particularly on the subject we involved today. The issue of operators currently being operational, the likes of Silver Sands, which the question was raised as to have we already issued licenses. The fact of the matter is no, they are operating illegally. Yes, what is currently happening is there is an investigation going on the matter, and it's currently being handled by the Financial Intelligence Center Act, South African Police Services. Unfortunately, it started within the era of Scorpion, and the transformation delayed certain processes happening because it was a gray area whether it's a commercial crime, or it's organized crime. Remember, organized crime had to be dealt with by Scorpion, so we had a bit of a delay on that process. However, further to that, we've referred the case to SARS, the South African Revenue Services, because there's issues of taxation which are involved there. And over and above that, it is being handled by a task team in committee. We've lost a project called Project Goblet within SAPS, which is looking into the thing. It's so unfortunate from their side because it's so complex such that they haven't come with a prescript of how the form of, allow me to use the way to take on is going to take shape within themselves. But it's a matter where from ourselves, we've done our investigation, and it's not only Silver Sands, it's a number of them. We have handed it to the law enforcement agencies, and they are responsible for that. But time and again, we are liaising in giving them expert advice in terms of what is required for them to be able to do the necessary prosecution, right? Which is one of the key factors why, from the records that we receive and calls that we receive from the people, there should be some kind of monitoring to these people where licenses are controlled locally, because they come to us to say, these people who have played, we have won, but we haven't received any money. Unfortunately, they are not regulated by us, therefore we say there's nothing we can do. But those jurisdictions are those sort of incredible jurisdictions whereby somebody, if he pays for a license, he applies, no monitoring or cares. They don't care about, you know, the follow-up in terms of disputes that arise from the player and the punter, which is what we are focused on. Right, there was a question which was raised on exclusion on interactive gambling, that currently exclusion is seen not to be working. I should say that on interactive gambling, it's where exclusion is going to work very effectively and simply, because everything is controlled by a system. There is no non-system interaction from the side of a punter where one can be missed by a system. You talk about third-party exclusion. We have certain third-party exclusion. They are possible, but one of the major challenges that we have with the law enforcement agencies is the complication within the issue of gambling, firstly. Secondly, is the priority among issues which relate to gambling as opposed to general crime. So you find that you have such kind of a backlog when it comes to entertainment of those cases, be it in civil court or criminal court, which relates to gambling, and then it doesn't receive the necessary priority. But the way the system is going to work is that each and every operator who has will be operating in the country will have a server where he's going to load on the exclusion system, which will be linked to his server. Immediately you pronounce yourself to be excluded in the system, you'll be linked with the system automatically, to an extent that immediately you try to log in, your account will be disabled. But it will be kept for the record, because somewhere else the record might be needed. So it will be quite an easy, because you link through a system, immediately you pronounce yourself excluded, that account is disabled, and we'll do monitoring to it. There will be a special monitoring program where we'll take the physical exclusion document and then we compare to the account which was issued to that and see whether it was activated or not. Right. The monitoring of minors has been a key issue. On the comments that came from particularly international stakeholders who are now also involved at an international level with the same aspect which we are dealing with here, interactive gambling, they've criticized us to be a bit harsh on the issue of allowing players to play on the system as opposed to other jurisdictions, in the sense that we require registration. This is now specifically geared to underage gambling, which is a critical and key area. Firstly, we are requiring registration, and we are saying prior to that registration being approved, you cannot transact. While in the other jurisdictions it's different. You can put your document, you can register, but interimly, you are allowed to play even if that registration is not approved, which is very, very critical in our case. We are saying, no, there is no transaction, not even a single one, which will occur until the registration is completed. Now, what constitutes a completion of a registration? One, you must have that ID, a copy of it certified, and you must give it through to the operator. Now, the operator, over and above that, has got a responsibility to validate the ID. How he validates that is going to put it in his internal control procedure. So it's not a matter of me taking my ID and forging it and presenting it to be like a legitimate 18-year-old or above ID. There's also a verification process which is required. Not only is it required in terms of the National Gambling Act, it's also required in terms of the Financial Intelligence Center Act, because it says the ID and your home address shall be verified. How you verify it is your own prerogative, but you will submit to us in the form of internal control procedures and will agree to the method of verification that we have. So it's not only registration, it's verification. You'll go to a commissioner of oath and you'll say, it's me, I'm above 18. Those are some of the prerogative measures which are taking place. Over and above that, we are saying you shall not use a cash transaction, which means if you try to avoid using the credit card, let's say you have an underage and you've got through the loop, but you must still use a credit card or a card facility. You must, over and above there, still make a verification that I'm above the age of 18, and you can only use the credit card, which means you cannot just take cash and deposit and then you start transacting without the use of the credit card. So it's another impediment which we create as a yes to say, oh, people who are not of the right age will not be able to gamble. Over and above that, we say, right, gambling has occurred. Now there are transactions in place. We've got an option to have a process where you lodge a dispute. Now, once you lodge a dispute, there are certain processes. Let's say your dispute says, you know what, I've never gambled. Somebody used my credit card and my documents, which happens to be, let's say, your kid, who has now another 18 gambled using your facilities that he has taken from the house. We go back and we verify the basis on which the dispute has been lodged from the real account owner. That's why we say one nominated account, not a lot of nominated accounts, and one player account. And there shall be no transfer between accounts. So as to monitor this thing very closely. Now, once the dispute is issued, we look into the dispute and we say there was an invalidity in the registration where the operator failed to exercise the necessary precautions to ensure that under 18s are not measured. And that dispute will be awarded in favor of the punter, and the operator will lose. So it's a prerogative of the operator to make sure that his processes are in place to ensure that under 18s do not falsify documents and register, and they do not participate. Come the time of annual renewal, now referring to the other question which was posed, come the time of annual renewal, the first thing that I look at when I renew a license annually is your record of compliance. And there are certain critical issues which, to me, if it's non-compliant, renewal will not occur. Let's say, for instance, there's been an habitual registration and interaction with under 18. It's a definite no in terms of the renewal. So we are curbing it to a greater extent with the under 18, and we are above par with the international norm which has been put by other jurisdictions outside South Africa. And there was touch base of the number of licenses, right? How the licenses are going to be issued, whether they'll be issued four operation licenses per person and so on. What will happen in the board is, on the request for application, there'll be what we will call in simple terms a scoring methodology from the board in terms of evaluation of those licenses. Now, when that scoring occurs, if the prerogative of the board is to decentralize the licensing from the economic hubs of the countries, which is the likes of Gauteng, let's say, KZN, and to benefit the so-called smaller provinces, allow me to use those words, not offensively, that this will be where the scoring mechanism will come, where if somebody puts his bid on the table and I put it on the RFA, that priority will be given to those who apply for licenses in the so-called smaller provinces. My scoring methodology will give more score and more points to a person who moves to where the RFA drives him or her to in the smaller province, let's say your Northern Cape or Northwest kind of a thing. However, one should know that they'll have certain challenges with infrastructure because the smaller provinces have got infrastructure which relates to challenges in infrastructure which relates to interactive gambling. So this is the methodology, part one, that the National Gambling Board will use in terms of the prerogative that will come from government in terms of this thing, and obviously from the board members in terms of how do they feel about the location of the licenses, and then the scoring methodology from us as operational staff will put it in a manner that it suits the requirement of the board or what the board intends to achieve in terms of that. The renewal, the issue of the renewal of the license, the duration of the license would be 5 years, but every year you'll have to renew your license. Now you've got to prove a number of issues on that. Your fit and properness, which means you have to be within the law and exercise everything within the law on all aspects of your business. You're not only focusing on gambling. If you are having a tax finding which renders you to be unfit and proper, we'll never renew that license. All that we'll do is we'll not take over SARS' job in monitoring that and ensuring that we issue or contest returns. We'll just liaise with SARS and say, SARS, tell us, Mr. So-and-so, is it in your good book? If SARS says no, then we don't do it. The same applies to the issue of criminal records on entities or sanctions which have been issued on entities where acts of wrongdoing have been committed by those entities. Over and above that, issues of financial viability, leaving to your bid that you have proposed to say, I will do this. If you grant me the license, I'll do the following things. If you haven't done them, they constitute breach of the license condition, therefore, no renewal will occur. In actual fact, those issues will never even wait for renewal. Somewhere within the course of the year, will apply or process a revocation or suspension of the license and it should take its course. So there will be a number of issues that will be considered, particularly within the issue of fit and properness and historically non-compliance to legislation of the country. Right, the issue of linking with other government entities in respect of illegal gambling. Currently, as we speak, we have direct link with FATF. We have been evaluated as a gambling regime as part of the entire money laundering regime on FATF. We'll be discussing further input on the report which has been issued by FATF. So we've got that direct link to an extent that we even have got the list through the link with FATF of the countries which have been blacklisted, which we will say to operators, make sure that you put IP polling in your system such that these people who are located or these players who are located from these countries cannot operate, and we'll monitor them. We are also forging cooperative agreements with those kind of countries who have currently licensed interactive gambling to ensure that the prosecution goes on. Through the SAPS unit of commercial crime, they are dealing with that and they are supposed to report back to us because we cannot prosecute this illegal gambling which happens in foreign jurisdictions without the necessary cooperative agreements between the law enforcement agencies. It's quite a difficult thing. It involves foreign affairs outside our terrain, but we've put the challenge to them. SAPS are dealing with it, and they'll come back to us. Again, we're looking at establishing memorandum of agreements with those jurisdictions which we have licensed so that if
it's not an issue whereby we are of the opinion that it has to go through the prosecution authority, therefore going through cooperative agreements. It goes between the two regulators where we monitor it. We see that it refers to this jurisdiction. Therefore, from our side, it's a breach of a legislation. We'll contact that jurisdiction directly and say, your operator X is violating our act. Therefore, we're of the opinion that corrective measures should be applied or revocation of the license. So there is an interaction with different government institutions outside the South Africa. Right. The government access on gaming data, there's quite a number of data which is being produced in relation to gambling in the country. We've got the 9 provinces who also do their own research, their own monitoring, their own statistics that they have. Unfortunately, with issues of cooperative governance of this and concurrent legislation of this kind of era, we cannot prescribe to them what we want and only get from them what they have done. Through other measures, we can forge a relationship with them to an extent that what is required in the quarterly report that has been proposed on the table to say we should issue the statistics quarterly, it will be made available. However, we also have got the NRGP, which is located here in Cape Town in Kenilworth. It does a number of research projects, a number of data on gambling, particularly with responsible gambling and problem gambling, to an extent that the data is always, we put it on our website, they've got their own website. I think more is an initiative from the side of the members.
What is responsible gambling? Can you tell me what that is? You use that phrase so often. What is it? How would you describe it?
In my own way, I would describe responsible gambling as if a person who gambles with the notion to receive entertainment but not looking for gain. That's what I would define as responsible gambling. If you gamble to get entertainment but not looking for gain, as a primary...
Okay. That of course can be another debate just now, but let's just carry on. I mean, there's responsible drinking as well.
Exactly.
We all know what responsible drinking is. I enjoy my wine, my whiskey.
Exactly. So that data is available. All I'm saying is the data might be vast and diverse to an extent that one doesn't know what to put for the members, you know, as a package and so on, but mostly it's primarily from the member side, a proactive measure that they should take to log on these websites because there's a vast, vast of data. And, you know, time and again we've been sending annual reports and data through the coordinator of the committee to say this should go to members for them to read, particularly on issues, as I've said, on responsible gambling, where people are saying, we don't see anything happening. When you send this data to say, there are certain departments who have received training and public awareness on issues of gambling. I mean, it's quite a number of them which has been said, and certain amount of financial investment which has been done on that. It's all on record. But as the report is required, we'll do our endeavor to craft it as and how it is required. Right? Corruption is the process of issuance of license. Unfortunately, I cannot vouch as an individual to say what is the board going to make as prerogative to ensure that there's no corruption in the issuance of that license. Firstly, it's an issue that lies within each and every individual. But what will happen is we are going to set the criteria for the board. And as staff, we're going to make the necessary statement. However, we will not make any recommendations because that's where the issues of corruption comes in. You do the investigation and you don't make the recommendation. All what you say is, this is what is required to be met, this is what they've met, and this is the scoring. And you give it to the board as an independent person to say the board now should start scoring. And I believe from the issues of corporate governance, it's not going to be a one-man issue of the board saying, yeah, I feel this, that, and that is taken on. It's an issue of voting, you know, from the board members and reaching consensual agreement in terms of ensuring that everybody, you know, is happy about the process. And again, it's subject to appeal and it can go to the outside court where we can even produce, we are required to produce documentary evidence of how we came to the necessary conclusion that this is the preferred winner in terms of that license. The voluntary exclusion, why it's 1 year, there's a bit of an anomaly there. the National Act is saying for life, this one is saying for year. We are correcting that. However, if you read it in context, it says for a minimum of 1 year. But the fact of the matter is, once you are excluded voluntarily, it's for life, unless, one, you go through a rehabilitation process, which is sort of, allow me to use the word, approved by the National Gambling Board through a recognized counselor or the program which has been put through the National Responsible Gambling Program. After that, you then apply to be removed from the exclusion. So it's not even an automatic process to say, once I go there, I'm therefore removed. You apply to be removed from the process, and your application is processed, and then you are removed. So it's not an issue of 1 year after 1 year, you can go back to the old habits. It's not like that as it's currently happening, right? The monitoring, which is very, very, very essential in this issue, and the supervision of gambling. There's talks of proliferation of gambling and increase of gambling. I should put it on record that for December, the Casino Association reported that there has been, you know, a hit down on revenue, as revenue went down. They suffered as a result of the economic recession we are. So to say that gambling is ever increasing, we're looking at it. Yes, but the point that I'm coming to is all forms of gambling are being monitored from a sense of ensuring that it stays within the quota that is given or outlined in the legislation. If it's for the casinos, nowhere do we go and say we want the extra casino, but if these are the technical standards, again, nowhere do we say we relax the technical standard to ensure that they get more revenue from the, therefore, dealing with the issue of proliferation of gambling. I think from the side of DTI as well, they've been cautious because there's been cause of greyhound racing, there's been cause of person-to-person betting exchanges, but the cautious approach, which is in line with ensuring that there's no proliferation of gambling, we've said we have to do a research into that, we have to do a commission and get an informed study in terms of which position to take in terms of these new forms of gambling. You know, we don't just willy-nilly, you know, say yes to operators who approach us with new forms of gambling in terms of that respect. Monitoring of minors, I've dealt with it. Addiction, I've dealt with it. The local economic development and jobs, you know, there was a critical issue which was mentioned as to how is one going to deal with those issues. These issues will be outlined in the, particularly in the RFA, which is where the board is going to say what kind of directive do they want from these operators to follow as to achieve the following. For instance, let's say on the issue of SMMEs, we're going to rely highly on the codes of good practice, and those are just minimum.
Sorry, I must just interrupt you. Not all of us are old members of this committee, and I don't know what an RFA is, for one thing.
My sincere apology, Chairperson.
I'm wondering, it's not RAF, it's RFA, isn't it?
The request for application, what happens is after this whole process of secondary legislation is completed, we are going to put a request for application where we invite the operators to put their applications. Now, on that request for application, we're going to put certain things that we want, that they should meet as a minimum. If they haven't met it, therefore they don't go to the next level of being considered for the license. Now, we're going to put it to an extent that it meets the requirements that we want to achieve as outlined in the broad-based economic empowerment, the code of good practice, to an extent that if we have to tabulate and say we want 5% of your total spending on goods and services to be within SMMEs, those are some kind of bidding process that we'll put. And we'll monitor it, and failure to adhere to it on a continuous basis will lead to non-compliance, therefore revocation of a license or non-renewal. So there are quite a number of measures which one can take, whether it be on issues of arts and culture, where we are of the opinion that so much money they should put on arts and culture if we so believe, or on SMEs or socio-economic development. You know, within the 7 levels of the Code of Good Practices outlined, we've got that flexibility and freedom to say, this is what we want. So it's an issue that will be crafted by the board to say, this is the direction that it takes. So we are, excuse me, in the advantage of putting it the way we want it and putting it on license conditions, such that if it's not met, it's breach of license conditions, therefore you kiss your license goodbye. And I think it's quite critical in the sense that it also emanates and
you know, evolves even to other things where people can start talking of infrastructure and so on. Because it is possible that you can put an infrastructure, because I hear this notion that there's no infrastructure relation to interactive gambling. But such was limitation on infrastructure on casinos. But through the request for application, we were able to ask casinos, or casinos were able to come on the table and put infrastructure that was not related to gambling at all. For instance, the issue of a convention center, it's not related to gambling. It's something which is outside, let alone the infrastructure where the casino operates. So nothing stops from us to say, we shall put 5% infrastructural development in the community where you've put your operation, and then they'll specify depending on the need and approval of that council and so on and so on. So it is quite an open thing for the board to decide what to do. Right, the issue of banking and age, I've touched on it.
Yes, but you didn't touch on the linkage with Home Affairs.
Let me explain it in this fashion. Sorry, that will be a bit technical. What is the requiring from the side of the operator when he verifies his age, over and above everything, to ensure that the system that he used has got an algorithm which Home Affairs uses that verifies the age? You cannot just write your age, you know, starting with your date of birth, and such that it doesn't form a certain algorithm, which is an approved technical algorithm. Otherwise, if you punch it, the system will tell you it's an invalid ID. So those are some of the technical requirements. The same algorithm, which is the same formulation, is what Home Affairs uses. Right. We have it operating now with the exclusion system, where you can type any ID, try to type it, but if it doesn't form the algorithm, it will say to you outright, it's an invalid ID, which is the same standard algorithm that a lot of developers use in the system.
Which department in Home Affairs? Because you're depending on efficiency in Home Affairs. So where in Home Affairs is this going to be done?
No, it won't be done at Home Affairs. It's a program which is already there, an algorithm program, which everybody sort of acquire and you buy, and you can install it in your system such that when you punch your ID on the system, it will tell outright as much as it will tell them at Home Affairs, right? Although the danger with that is that you can put somebody's ID and coincidentally it could be the right ID. I'm not saying it's a wholly complete.
You see, if I can just explain my own concern here, Mr. Marasha. It is Mr. Marasha, is that right?
My name's
Marasha.
Now,
that's good. Ms. Mahasha, you know, let's just take social development. They stopped doing that because of the problems that they had, one. Two, you can't even take an ID with an affidavit ID. You've got to have an original. Now, why would they have to have done that in very difficult cases? Not people who want to gamble, people who are in dire straits have to wait for weeks because they have to, months to comply with that, because they experienced these problems, not 10 years ago only and five, but as late as last year. So the reason we are asking this is not because we may not be familiar with the technical requirements of this ID and the algorithms or whatever it is that you were talking about, but rather because perhaps one could call it the fraudulent exercises or practices in relation to this, which has prevented other departments from utilizing this. So the question was really linked to what you are doing, which may be high tech, what is there in Home Affairs, which we have on the minister's own admission previously and now, the new minister, has to be sorted out urgently because there are serious problems there. So it's that issue. How are you going to prove that a 17-year-old is not 18 who's borrowed someone's ID and opened a bank account with it, or his mother's or father's or whatever?
Okay, from the side of the bank account, if we receive a bank account, unfortunately, we cannot verify that because that is done within the auspices of the bank. However, from the issue of the ID, remember we're saying the ID must be certified and verified by, okay, let's leave the verification, let's go to the certification. Now, it is up to the commissioner of oath at hand that we rely on to say, this is where the person will go with the original ID. We have to do the verification in terms of the person coming to me is coming with an authentic ID. You understand? To say, I therefore certify this ID to be true. Right. And over and above that, it goes with a statement of oath that says, I am above 18. Not only can you send somebody and say, certify the ID. Remember, you're doing a statement under oath now that says, I am above 18, which they must now look at your ID and see, this is you, it doesn't look a forged ID. Unfortunately, if it has been forged from the side of Home Affairs such that it looks legitimate, we cannot do anything about that. So those to us are the two critical measures that we are saying we will apply. And we're relying highly on the system at hand of using a commissioner of oath. Although we are being criticized by a lot of foreign jurisdictions because of that strictness, but we're trying to close that loophole in terms of that. Right. I don't know if I've missed any questions from the side of operations. Okay. Can I... Sorry, through you, Chair, I see Dr. Ben Turok's hand is up.
Well, I just wanted to check on the two of first, have you finished what you said?
Yes, from my side, from a operational side.
Is this just immediately to do with what has been said?
Yes, that's a few other points.
Okay, because I'd like to get certain completion before, and I know that the Sethi had something else in mind to bring on something.
I just wanted to talk on just on two issues, and I thought that in terms of monitoring, I'm not sure if we have addressed ourselves sufficiently on the issue of monitoring. As I was listening, it's challenging. We must admit the monitoring, because that monitoring would, in some instances, require physical inspections, and that must also be done on a regular basis. Whilst you are also trying to guard against the interference at all times to the size of the business operator. But I think it is important that we share with this committee for fairness what is it that we are doing on monitoring, because it will be very difficult. First of all, because it will require technical capacity. What is it that we have done to prepare ourselves as the National Gambling Board in preparation for the interactive gambling? We must appreciate that it is quite new. I mean, it's something that is done over the internet, and there are people who are very skilled in terms of IT issues here. Are we up to scratch even when certain sophisticated moves are being done or introduced? What is it that we are doing to keep up with such sophistication? Also, in relation to the behind-the-scenes actions that are currently taking place in terms of interactive gambling. So in terms of personnel, in terms of the technical capacity, in terms of fostering relationships with the provinces, in monitoring, in terms of the frequency of that monitoring, ensuring that we will these operators will actually adhere to the requirements of this legislation. So I will come back to that, Chair, if you allow us, just very briefly for Temba to just address the committee so that the committee can advise if there are still some gaps in that area. Paul will just talk briefly about the just on three issues as we asked by the committee members as to what are the key concerns that were raised by the stakeholders. If we can just touch on that, and what is our approach in trying to accommodate those key concerns.
Yes, I think go ahead and complete that, and then I'm sure we may have further questions on our side.
Thank you, Chair, and the committee members. To talk to the comments that we received on the regulations, the real concern is the issue that Temba already touched on the registration requirement, that before a player can actually interact, they require a statement of oath and a bank stamp indicating that where the player resides, interactive gambling is actually allowed. And the the fact that a player also has to, they register, I mean, the player also has to submit the identification documents as per FICA requirements. That issue was raised by a lot of stakeholders and potential applicants. And when we sat and talked about it, we felt that the rationale behind the requirements is to prohibit or to try and monitor and prevent minors in interacting. And if a player wants to interact, those would be the requirements that they would have to fulfill prior to engaging in interactive gambling. The other important issue, or rather contentious issue that was raised, relates to the limit of the amount that is required for interactive gambling. That when you interact, the maximum amount that is set is 20,000. Most of the comments, especially again going back to potential applicants that might want to be IG operators, they say it's a low amount and it will actually not attract any of the potential operators to come and apply for these licenses. But what we're saying is that looking at problem gambling, looking at how one would want to play and try to chase the winnings and you don't actually get to win, it's quite important for us to put a limit that is 20,000. And in trying to deal with it, we said we would put to the committee the proposed amount, which is 50,000, and see how the committee feels about the 50,000 that we're proposing as opposed to 20,000 that is already in the regulations. Okay. The two other points that were raised relate to the exclusion that the Temba already talked to, that one excludes themselves from interacting for a period of 1 year. It says for a minimum, I think he touched on it, it's a minimum of 1 year. And if you want to be removed from the register, then you can apply to the board and then processes will take place. I think the issue is if you are a problem gambler already, we need to give you time for you to try and assess yourself and see if now you are fit and proper to get back to playing and gambling. The last point that came out really strongly on the comments relates to person betting, where I think the regulations already in the presentation, they say you will interact with the house, the operator. And I think internationally, interactive gambling includes P2P, where you interact with person-to-person betting, where you would interact with another person. What we're saying, even what we said last year to this committee, was that currently we don't have a position, a policy position on how to regulate P2P. We do not have the standards as yet. We do not have the norms that would regulate, and we don't know how far it would go, this thing, because you would be playing with somebody from another jurisdiction. So these are the issues that we need to sit down and talk to prior to us saying, yes, we're pronouncing on P2P. And one of the measures and a temporary measure that we have enforced now is for the minister to appoint a gambling review commission that will review the gambling industry holistically and look at all these issues and all the other activities that DTI has received a request on, to say we need to regulate some of these issues. Temba touched on them, your greyhound racing, your harness racing, your FASI, and other activities that we might not actually know about that are played in other jurisdictions. The commission will look at all these activities and pronounce on the police, and then we will come back to this committee to say these are the activities that are there and get a direction from the committee. Thanks.
Yes, thank you.
Point.
Yes, yes.
Am I right?
Thank you so much, and my sincere apologies. Yes, that I missed the issue on monitoring. Monitoring is a very key one and a challenging one to the National Gambling Board. However,
I should mention to the House that what is happening currently on limited payout machines, which are the machines outside casino, it's almost in infrastructure, except a few things, the same like what will happen in internet gambling. The only difference is that you'll not be using a static machine, you'll be using something which is mobile, be it a computer, a phone, a laptop, and so on. And you will not use a dedicated line, but a wireless line, which is your 3G and so on. But if you look at the parameters and the setup, they are almost the same. We have a current structure of how we are monitoring limited payout machines, which is games which are residing, although they are residing on the machine, but everything and a lot of configuration is in the servers. We have regular inspections, although currently they are being done by provinces, but when we work those inspection manuals, we were working hand in glove through subcommittees, which we are all part of. So there is primarily an inspection methodology of how we do deal with that, although it has to have a leg further to now deal with games which are located in a server and not a machine, technically something like that. We will also conduct financial audits, which are also conducting currently on the limited payout machine, which is being monitored by a company called Zonke. So those financial audits, from quarterly audits, monthly audits if you want to, quarterly audits are mandatory, and then annual audits as well of the operators using their server. We'll also do IT technical audits, where you use the likes of COVID IT and best practices in IT to ensure that their configuration continuously is in line with those three elements which I've mentioned in terms of password control and all those things. We'll also be conducting IT security audit, which we have conducted twice on the entity called Zonke, where we ensure certain level of security as specified in ISO 17799 and the necessary security parameters which should exist within an environment where the game and data moves from one point to another, where it's far apart, not housed in one house. So basically, the issue of monitoring the actual game within the licensed entity, it is a challenge in us expanding only the capacity and expanding from this framework of limited payout machine to a framework of interactive gambling. However, the biggest challenge on the issue of monitoring is the issue of monitoring from the illegal operation side, where you've got somebody seated in another jurisdiction. He sets a server, and you've got people within the country that are connecting illegally as it is currently happening. And it won't be a new challenge at that point in time, to an extent that we'll be dealing with it for the first time. It's an existing challenge where we've done our case, and we've done our part as the National Gambling Board, and we've handed it over to a law enforcement agency, which leads us to challenging issues on the legislation itself, particularly on administrative sanction issue and, you know, our relationship with law enforcement agencies and how effectively they deal with our cases, which unfortunately are issues which are within a very high level from our side. But if, as an inspector, I've done a report which now contemplates, let's say, for instance, the NPA, for them to be able to prosecute and then do not do anything further or at a level or speed I want to, unfortunately, it becomes a challenge which is beyond our control, which is the current situation on how we are sitting with the issue of illegal gambling on the side of internet. However, on the parameters of licensed entities, we are, it's just a matter of us increasing the capacity, acquiring the necessary stuff that will assist us. Since we are not doing it now, we don't have the necessary stuff, but it's just a process of us going through and then we're acquiring the stuff that will deal with that. So the monitoring from the side of licensed entities, it will really not be much of a challenge. The challenge is the one which is outside our control, the one of illegal gambling.
I want to thank you very much, the team here on this, on my right, from DTI, the National Gambling Board. But what I'm just looking at our time constraints of 11, rather hoping we'd finish then, but not at the expense of actually drilling down into the regulations. So I'm not going to prevent members from raising further questions or following up. So let's have the follow-ups first. Let's have fresh questions second. Follow-ups, please, first.
Yeah,
Honourable Turok.
I'm sorry, I was away earlier, so maybe I repeat something other people have said. But let me say I have sympathy for the staff. I really feel sorry for you. You're doing a tough job, and it's something which is not a very pleasant job, in my view, given the feelings in this committee and I think in the country. What I don't understand, Chair, is why the DTI is spending so much energy on this stuff. You know, DTI has got a huge mandate, and this committee is monitoring the work of DTI on very important stuff about job creation and so on, and here we are spending so much paper and energy on this stuff, which is really antisocial in many ways. Certainly the consequences are antisocial, as we have said on many occasions. In our constituencies, the reaction to this stuff is negative. And I believe on the whole in South Africa, there is a feeling that gambling leads to all sorts of nasty social consequences. So why we're doing this, I don't know. And I'm knowing the views of the minister on this stuff, I think the ministerial review is going to be very severe, because he was the chair of this committee when we opposed a lot of this stuff. So I have great sympathy for you, and please, if I say something which is rather strong, you will understand where I come from. And in particular, your last point about the dependency on law enforcement. Law enforcement in South Africa is not strong, as we know, and as you've said. And since the monitoring of this stuff is high-tech, in areas where there's a huge amount of fraud, credit cards. I mean, you depend so much on credit cards. All the banks are telling us that credit card fraud is expanding at an exponential rate. IT, our computers are hacked all the time. I'm getting spam daily, you know, that I don't want. So these guys are going to get into my computer, and every day I'm going to get adverts for internet gambling, which I don't want. So, you know, you're talking about monitoring capability, but even worse is law enforcement capability, which is poor. So if we go into something where we're not certain of the outcome, is this wise, given the energy that you have to spend and that we're spending on something which is socially really not very desirable? So let me deal with specifics, since the chair. Chair, we as Parliament have a morality responsibility, and we've said this again and again. And it's not only the effectiveness of what we pass in terms of regulation, but also the morality which drives it. And I can assure you that the minister is with us on the morality or immorality of this stuff. So now, and you told us that some of the operators now are acting illegally. Well, isn't that a danger signal for us? If these guys are already, I missed the actual, you know, what you were saying, but I did hear that some of these people, I don't even know their names, are operating illegally, and now you're trying to get the Scorpions and somebody else to act. You know, I'm not sure if I misheard, but this is what I heard. So if there's already illegal activity in this area at the moment, what's going to happen in future? Please, let us be very cautious. And as I say, you have my sympathy. The question of cell phones, mobile phones, my recollection is that this was not in the original documentation you brought us last year. I may be wrong, but my recollection was that it was all about computers. Now, I will oppose very strongly, I assure you, any allowance of internet gambling through mobile phones. This is where children are going to get involved. You know, if it's a computer, the parents can control more or less. But if it's a cell phone, they'll be doing it in our schools. In our primary school, maybe even nursery school. You see? Mobile phones. It's the most interactive thing of all, as we know, in our society today. We would be crazy to allow mobile phones to be used for gambling. Crazy. I would say totally irresponsible, Chair, and I say this a bit warmly, because this is opening up a door. Because if you're talking about play machines, for instance, which we discussed endlessly here, and the Minister, Rob Davies, was so opposed to these play machines, because they've expanded into all the townships, all the shebeens, and so on, or many. He was strongly opposed to that. I can hear him say something about these cell phones. No way. No way. Computers at home, maybe we can be a little bit tolerant there, but cell phones, no way. I asked for three monthly reports to Parliament. You dealt with monitoring, but you didn't deal with that. If you please, Chair, I would say a condition of any approval, certainly from me, would be absolutely conditional on three monthly reports on effectiveness, on prosecutions, on whether the law enforcement people are doing what you want, and if they're not doing what you want, then we must say no. Strongly as that. So, Chair, I have huge reservations about this whole exercise. I think it's a waste of time of DTI with scarce resources. People like you, you're obviously a lawyer, should be doing other things, please. So, with no offense to you, but it is not good stuff. Thank you.
Right. Honorable Indikalana?
Chairperson, bed goes now. Scott Music. I told you. I told you to Scott Music. But, Chair, that's I don't think. Unless I missed it, I was quite keen, just as an extrapolation to what Comrade President Turoga said, the extent and the manner of, or the government's ability of accessing data that's collected through interactive gambling, unless I missed that, because I'm very, very keen, because at the end of the day, research has been done globally as to the effects of and socio-economic effects of gambling, and I'm sure in the context of the state's the obligation to ensure that there is morality within, or moral fiber is upheld within the South African society, I definitely maintain that it has to have access to the data. I make reference once again to the playing patents, because that's amongst other things where the substance of the data would be collected. You know, who is a frequent gambler, who is an irresponsible gambler, who is a habitual or a responsible gambler, and all of that. Just as a comment, the person-to-person gambling is also a cause for concern now, because with the other forms of gambling, at least there's the operator who can monitor and from which you can access data. I'm not making any pronouncement, but surely one way or another, we've got to crack our skulls and be creative as to where and how do we access information around person to person. Maybe there should be some intermediary of one form or another, and the process that are triggered by that person to person gambling or betting, a portion of it should then be to that intermediary of whatever nature, so that we can have data. The fundamental to me, Chair, there is no way that there could be any form of gambling that doesn't create a repository of data, which can be monitored at the end of the day. Otherwise, you know, why should we allow it? Because we won't be able to monitor it, because we do not have access to data.
I'm just wondering, is this interactive gambling, I mean, I'm not a gambling fundee, is the person-to-person you're talking about? What's contemplated here? This didn't sound... I'm not a gambler, but... Okay, so what I'd like to do at this moment in time is stick to the interactive gambling rigs, because I know we're going to have to call the gambling board back in the DTI.
I'm drawing from what was being said by Ms. Mahash.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm drawing. What I'm saying is I took you from what you are saying. Also, the cost of financial intelligence and monitoring of all illegal activities or whatever, I'm just interested, how is that done? Where is it secured? Is it part of general FICA activities? because there's a cost in financial intelligence. There's a cost in monitoring all of this. You know, is it on the shoulders of DTIs, or is it spread amongst various departments or amongst various regulatory bodies? Chair, as a last point, I think I'll keep quiet thereafter. It's just a humble proposal that within this term, the fourth term of Parliament, I propose that we have at least two public hearings to look at the impact of gambling on the gamblers themselves and the socio-economic benefits, particularly the BEEs, and whereby we can invite various stakeholders, the government, experts, just to give us an overview of what is it all about. Because as we speak here, you can sense that we are making pronouncements, we are querying things, you know, at times out of knowledge, but at times as an inquiry that we want to know more. So it would be helpful that we have down the line a massive public hearing, a really massive one, like what you saw during the children's bill and similar things like that, so that we can have a sense where gamble debacle. Thank you.
There are two or three other questions which could be regarded as fresh questions. I think those were the two follow-ups, if I'm not mistaken. And then we have the Honourable Maria looking around me. Right, and the Honourable Van der Westhuizen. Right.
Thank you, Chairperson. This is also a follow-up question. From a morality point of view, you know, I can't do anything but agree with the speakers for me. This will also have a huge impact on the social development of our nation. I also argue and say, you know, there's so many gambling opportunities already. Do we really need this? How would this add in terms of GDP, for instance, or economic activity and growth and development in South Africa? Seeing obviously the existing opportunities that we've got. Then secondly, just on advertising, surely there must be a cooperation between yourself and other regulatory bodies. If there's illegal gamblers or organizations like ServerSense, how can they be allowed to advertise? How can they be allowed to advertise if that's already been handed over to authorities? How on earth can they be allowed to still advertise on television? Surely there must be, and maybe you must tell us, you know, what is your cooperation with other bodies in that regard? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've a number of items, and I'm going really to try and be short, concise. First, I don't want to act on behalf of the department, but the problem with interactive gambling, as I understand it, is it knows no boundaries, it knows no borders. It is an international thing, and I know of people, South Africans, that are doing it on a regular basis via the internet. And therefore, in that sense, I think we need to just regulate it in South Africa, and therefore I'm reluctantly supporting the what we have in front of us. But then I would like to see a few things in the regulations that I don't see there at present. The first one is that these websites of these operators must state that they are registered in South Africa, that they comply with the IG regulations, etc. It must be identified. The problem with a website is you don't know, who's the person on the other side. Where is he or she sitting? Are they in Swaziland, or are they in America or in Europe, or wherever are they? Another thing which I don't see clearly enough, and especially when it comes to the whole issue of credit card payments, is I would love to see this no credit to be allowed, in the sense that you cannot gamble on debt. In our act, it is stated very clearly, but as soon as you come into credit card territory, then it seems to me as if it becomes problematic, and I would like some clarity on that as well. To come back to the previous issue, I think Mr. Themba Mahashi has actually confirmed my fear that, you know, the whole process of declaring somebody unfit to play, to exclude people. I think if you make it easier for people to gamble, you must also make it easier, on the other hand, to have people declared unfit or excluded from such games. And I don't see this here. So we are going into a situation of an unbalanced situation as far as I'm concerned. Then there are some very small, more, I won't say technical things, but I don't know if you want us to deal with that now or perhaps later. Things like regulation numbers that it refers to, that doesn't make sense to me. The word of the use, word immediately, is used on a few occasions. And immediately is always very problematic for me from a regulatory point of view. And then I would also like them to just, when it comes to the payments, well, there's another thing. For example, in 17.4D, they speak by contains endorsements by well-known personalities that suggest that interactive gambling contributed to their success. Now, why must it be well-known personalities? I would like, you know, that it prohibited that people can say gambling contributed to my success, because it's just, you know, not true. It cannot be. And then also, there are a few smaller grammatical or even touching typos that I think need the attention of the department before they take it any further. But if I could get some comments on the credit cards and whether electronic transfers of money isn't a safer way, in a sense, also limiting access, for example, for minors. If you only take an electronic transfer of money, then it must be a minor who's been authorized to transfer money, and I don't think that's even possible. So I would think there must be other ways of controlling the entering into play of some players. Thank you.
Myself wanted to just pose this. You see, we did read somewhere here about the borderless nature of this activity, the fact that it is already present here and being practiced. But it often poses the sort of philosophical argument that says, crime is here, it's borderless, so why don't we just regulate it by giving them a few licenses? It's a back-to-front sort of logic. The problem here is that we already have an act which was passed. This is the fourth parliament. Now, of course, there's no reason why acts can't be repealed by parliament. Now, I'm not suggesting that we're on that route. I'm just putting these on the table, these points, because in the final position, it is Parliament that makes the laws in this country. It's Parliament that repeals them as well. Certainly won't be the first time in 15 years we've had to repeal a law. However, that's maybe really looking at a very serious situation. The problem that is before us, which appears to have been spelt out by the department, is that this has all got to be completed by the 30th of June. And I was looking at our legal expert here, legal advisor, because I'd like to find out just where in the Constitution or whatever it's insisting on the 30th of June. You know, where does this date come from that we've got to be finished by the 30th of June? That's the legal side of it, and I'd like you to comment. The other side, of course, may well be, well, the act is here, it's passed, how are you regulating it? Which is just as problematic, that here's an act. And when I breezed through this act, nowhere did I see that it couldn't be enacted and operated before regulations. And some of the acts say that. Some of the acts actually say that this cannot be operational until after the regulations. Nowhere, nowhere is this here. People were busy gambling with our lives with this. So, you know, there are just so many loopholes here, and it's a thick document to try and get through in one night as well, that you're obviously going to miss a few things. But to me, this is just too flawed a process, and we're in the position of rubber stamping regulations now, because many of us have limited understanding of gambling. Certainly, interactive gambling is not something we're familiar with. If we were, it would have been as an illegal activity. And I think the points being raised here are very valid. I think the department itself and the Gambling Board are saying that they recognize the monitoring issues. They recognize these challenges. The second issue, and I don't want to compete with another interactive process, the second challenge that we're facing here that I think we all recognize is that if it's here, and that's often what was said about a number of these, perhaps we could just describe them as erstwhile leisure activities. They're here, they've been here since the time immemorial, so let's just regulate them and see if the state can't make a quick buck out of it. Well, again, that's a sort of very back-to-front logic. However, all of us, through provinces perhaps and here in Parliament, have said, if it's here and if we can regulate it so that we can reduce the worst side effects, etc., and try to redirect funds to social improvement and so on, this is better than nothing. But the point I'm really making, and I do want you to respond to these questions, before you do respond, I want the parliamentary legal advisor, who I see is busy consulting the Constitution, to give me a response, because I'm not happy with the process, not because people have not come prepared. You have come here fully prepared. Perhaps the people who are not prepared, because we're in a fourth term of Parliament and in a new committee, is the committee itself. I say perhaps. But I saw a hand just coming up then, Honourable Klobhauser.
Yeah, no, I wasn't trying to stop you. But thank you. I really have difficulty understanding the logic. I'm not so sure whether we are using these noble ideas of SMMEs, cooperatives, BEE, and so on and so on, to say to these operators they must go in there, assist people to create businesses, and then earn a living and waste their money again into gambling so that these operators actually, in fact, go in there to expand their market. But secondly, Chairperson, you know, there's been a report last year that the South African public is in debt by between 1.1 to 1.4 trillion rand. Is the real logic in us passing this thing through and saying people, in spite of being so indebted, go on to gamble their money away?
Just the definition question. The Act of 2004 defines interactive game as a game played through the mechanism of an electronic agent accessed over the internet. There's no cell phone here. Why did they introduce cell phones?
We've added that. There's just one last question. Who sits on the National Gambling Board? You can see this is because we haven't been engaging with you for 15 years or 12. And how do we make sure that some, if not all, of the members sitting on the board do not form part of the key personnel with the interactive gaming licenses? or own or have interest in either as providers of the services, manufacturers, or have an interest in shares in the manufacturing of the software. How do we do that? Especially, as I say, in one court judgment handed down about 10 years ago, it was quite clear that people had not applied their minds as they should have through the compromising in this area.
Thank you, Chairperson. In briefly answering your question, it is true the Act simply says that the regulations must be tabled in Parliament before publication in the Gazette. And the situation would normally arise where, that's according to the Interpretation Act, it would normally arise where you need the regulations before the Act comes into operation. Then we would have, I think it's Section 14 of the Interpretation Act, then you would have to determine whether it is necessary to have the regulations come before the Act. The criteria is that the regulations must be necessary to bring the Act into operation. So you would have your regulations before the Act. But fortunately, in this situation, the Act has already been signed by the President and it's in operation. So I do understand the position of the committee. However, personally, looking at the Act itself, it provides for a number of issues that must be prescribed. Almost each and every section requires something to be prescribed by the minister through regulations. So it might be very difficult for the Act to operate on its own based on that. We put a lot of issues when we went through the Act during the committee process. We put through a lot of things for later in the regulation. If you browse through the Act, you see that each and every section says that this matter must be prescribed by the minister through regulations. So I'm in a bit of a dilemma. I hear the committee that we shouldn't rush this. The legislative process is very important. It shouldn't be a hidden miss situation. But at the same time, facing the truth, looking at the actual Act,
Thank you very much. This enables us to make a very swift decision, but I still wanted to hear what the parliamentary legal advisor is saying.
Yes, Chairperson and the members, as I was saying, just quickly to recollect, I think that it would normally happen when the Act relies on regulations to come, but now the Act is coming to operation before the regulations. But for this particular piece of legislation, if you look at the sections of the Act, the subsections, almost each and every one of it requires that a process of prescribing regulations. The minister has to do this, the minister has to prescribe conditions, to even kickstart the process, player registration, conditions that the providers must satisfy. So it is.
On that basis, members, due to an operational exigency which has arisen in the House, which requires a quorum, and we would use to finish at 11. You can see we've exceeded our time there. And I'm sure you realized even then, before the whip on the House whip walked in, Honourable Ntabi Singh, that we were moving to some other decision, other than perhaps the one you may have been hoping for. And that is why I wanted the clarification first from Parliament's legal advisor. Because, no, we're not going to be completed on the 30th of June, number one. We are going to engage you further, number two. And number three, we will explore all aspects of how we can respond effectively. And that may include reviewing the piece of legislation already passed by way of amendment or whatever. You know, I use the word may advisedly because I want a full interrogation of this. I want to know the impact. Much water has passed under the bridge economically, socially. Our unemployment rate is very high. We're facing huge socio problems affecting all the people of South Africa. And in the light of this, it is no longer business as usual. So I think that this was extremely constructive for us to have this first engagement. I really do. I've certainly learnt a lot more, and I believe other members of the committee, even those who've been here for 10 years on the committee, have. But I'm through the committee secretary, Mr. Andre Hermans, we will contact you again. In particular, we will contact the head of your delegation, Ms. Nomfundo Maseti, to make further arrangements to engage you on this. And I believe it will be after the 30th of June if you look at our extremely tight schedule that we're facing. But I would appreciate it if the questions we have raised, which you have not been able to answer and respond to now, if you can respond to them in writing, using email, if necessary, to Mr. Hermans. But on that note, I would like to thank you most sincerely. And yes, we are not here to act as any religious organization monitoring the morals in that respect, but rather we are here to ensure the strengthening of moral fiber in our country in order to develop a cohesive nation. That's all. And that's what we intend doing. So thank you very much to members from the Department of Trade and Industry, and in particular yourself, Ms. Maseti, and very nice meeting you and your team. To members of this committee, please don't sidetrack yourself to offices. Please, can you please go to the old assembly and build up the quorum there? And may I remind you of a very important meeting tomorrow for the formal consideration of the budget vote. In other words, Should we be happy with our report, we will adopt it then. Please, you've all had them distributed, have you not? They're going through now. Take them to your caucuses, tell us what your caucuses are saying, and let's finalize the budget report. That is 4 o'clock to when we finish in G26 tomorrow. We hope to be finished by 6 o'clock. If it's later, anyone who doesn't have transport, please engage with the committee secretary. And by, say, transport, I mean buses. You know, if you don't have a bus leaving after 6, you better speak to Mr. Herman. Well, yes, I do have a very nice little car, and I can fit 3 people for Acacia Park in it. Thank you.